We'll be talking about the Zoophorids. That's one of the really beautiful families of beetles that I had a lot of things to do, but actually I haven't done much of the work since basically 2000, and I thought that that family has already been sold to one of the Mike Ivey's students, but unfortunately that doesn't seem to be the case right now, but we still have some hope for that. And my kind of time when I started working on those groups were when I was an undergrad student in the forestry department in Warsaw, and I had really very keen interest working on Cerambycid at that time. And my major advisor came to me one day and said, "Adam, give up those Cerambycids. There is nothing you can do about it. It's just overwhelming group." At that time, you couldn't really travel much from Poland, so you cannot get to Paris or London to see the types. But I've got this kind of box with little brown beetles, and I will show you this. So he came over with that box, and he showed me a Collidium and Avalonia. I said, "Oh, these are really fantastic." So this was my first really experience with those little beetles on the smaller spectrum, not of that big spectrum of the Zoophorids that we are talking right now, but. And then since I've been, you know, about 20 years that I had kind of quite intimate relationship with all those beetles and all those which have been included in all this big assemblage. There is three families now that have been lumped together into whatever we are called now Zoophoridae. There used to be a Colididae, Zoophoridae and a Monomatidae. The whole amalgamation started quite early, but actually the formal amalgamation happened in 1999. But when we look into the past of all those three families, the Colididae used to be a kind of a waste basket of the old beetles, actually. Whatever had kind of a four-segmented tarsi and a club antennae, that was completely a good candidate for Colididae. So in 1930, the Hatchco has put the world catalog, and there were about 140 genera, and all those families, you know, we have started to pulling out were included there, including some Dermestid, Jacobsonid, and everywhere. So I think that process has been cleaned up, and of course there were two now independent families there, including Botryderis and Cerulonis, which are now placed in the superfamily Cucugioidea. Zoophoridae, the ironclad beetles, had much less convoluted history. They were included by Soliere in his Pimeliae, or Tenturiae at that time, and that was only the genus Zoophorus. Then Leconte had the five genera in Tenturiae, and then Horn, and so on. They were, and then finally Casey and Horn came to the two tribes, Eusekines and Zoophorines. And then eventually John Doyne and John Lawrence put together the Eulodids, Eusekines, and Zoophorines into the family Zoophoridae. The family has been recognized first on based on the larval characters by Beivig and Krieghead. It's a kind of a weak character, and it's very hard to see actually. You see into the divide, you know, cardines, it's very hard really to look, but the character is there. Monomatis, that's been a really very clean case since Blanchard, 45, is being regarded as a independent family. It's always been in this kind of a Tenebrionoid complex, more or less. Right now there are 12 genera and about 230 species. The only really phylogenetic hypothesis is that one that I put together with John in 99. When we lumped together those families that has been already kind of been discussed, and we recognized two subfamilies, the true Collidiines and the rest Zoophorines. The difference was that we moved Pycnomerines, which used to be placed in Collidiines, into the Zoophorid complex, and that was one of the big moves, and actually we all owed the initial idea to Mike, who came over to Poland very early in his game and started to talking about it, but nobody believed him at that time. And also the split between the Zoophorines and the Phelopsis as a separate genus, and actually it looks like now the phyllops is probably maybe in sister group to monomathines and not to the zoopherines. That still is to be tested. It's all based on adult and larval morphology. There hasn't been any genes done so far, but I think this is something that we can start with. Technically, there are some synapomorphies, but they are pretty weak, actually, and they have a lot of reversals. When we talk about the Colidians, actually, the only character that defines them that they've got four segmented tarsi. And of course, there is, I don't know how many times, this tarsal combination in all other groups, including almost all Pycnomorines that have got all four segmented tarsi. And also the groups that have been used in zoopherines are based basically on heteromeron tarsomeres and the procoxy broadly separated. And basically there is a kind of a set of speed on a male submentum that has been lost independently several times as well. Now I will just kind of cruise through the major groups of zoopherids just to show you how beautiful those things are. The true zoopherines, the ironclad beetles, are really something that is best known of this whole group, and except in this part of the country where they occur. This is the group that is basically mostly distributed in New World, with a couple of taxa actually occurring in Old World. And they all very large, heavily sclerotized, with five-segmented tarsi, heteromeros. And when we look at the procoxy, they usually have the prostellar process kind of zoopheric type which is expanded and is going kind of behind the procoxy, and they don't have the cytospeed. That's one of the lineages when we postulated has been lost, and the ventroid 5 has got the preapical groove. The larvae have usually the very strong epicranial stem, and hypostoma rods are absent, and urogonphae are really kind of tiny and very close together. And we've got, of course, the beautiful zoopherus, and we have the preapical groove, which is usually divided into two pieces. And, in this case, we've got a really nice antennae, and Chuck has done some marvelous work on that early in his game. In New World, there are several genera, and Ian and Mike has been working on those now, so I know probably much less than they know, and these are all the pictures taken by Ian Foley. Really beautiful creatures, extending basically from California up to Brazil. And there is several new taxa. In Old World, we actually have three genera right now. This is the genus Choriaderma, which occurs only in Africa. Zoopher ivy, the single species of a beautiful little creature in the Cameroon Highlands. And the Zoopherosis georgiae, it is the Australian species, the only Australian true zoopherine species. Those are really, really, kind of massive and beautiful creatures. Unfortunately, we know very little about biology of those, and the larvae are boring in the wood. The second group is the eusikines, which have been placed in zoopherids as well for quite some time. And they are kind of a bipolar distribution on the United States and on this side of Japan. And there's two genera that one has got the open procoxal cavities, that's Yuseki morpha, and the second has got the closed procoxal cavities, that's Yusekus, which is much more widely spread. And those guys have the cytospeed on a submentum and much broader intercoxal process between the hind coxae. So these are the two species of Yusekus. This is the Japanese species, which is much more kind of a shorter and heavily built, comparing to the Californian Lacerta. Their larvae also have hypostomal rods. They don't have the epicranial stem, the kind of lariform frontal suture. And the urogonphae are very long and widely separated. The group that we moved from Colidians to zoopherines are Pycnomerini. This is basically a cosmopolitan group, but it's very heavily biased in southern hemisphere. The most of this is just one genus, Pycnomerus, which is basically worldwide. And those guys very often have four segmented tarsi outside, and most of them has got four segmented tarsi. The procoxal cavities are closed as well, the male has got a cytospit on a submentum. You can see the solidly fused three ventrites and abdomen. And the last ventrite is usually pretty long and kind of triangular and flat. It doesn't have any groove. And the intercostal process of the abdomen is kind of broad, I would say. These are the typical pycnomerines. This is the Pycnomerus terebrans from Europe. And that genus is extremely specious. It's probably hundreds and hundreds of species everywhere, including some which are living in subterranean habitats. It's completely flightless and have lost the eyes, and they're really, and especially in New Zealand and in some islands of Pacific and in Africa, they really got berserk. The genus Pycnomerodus is a southern hemisphere genus. It's described from New Zealand, but there are another two species known from the Falkland Islands. The less typical Pycnomerini are the genera which are occurring in Australia, and those used to be classified in Tenebrionis, usually in Stenocyanae, and this is the very large genus Cotyladus. This is one of the very few described species. They also, you see, there is the cytospit on the submentum. They've got the all heteromerous tarsi, like 5-5-4. So they look kind of like typical Tenebrionis. The Pycnomerine larvae, they usually have a very long epicranial stem, the hypostomal rods, and different kind of urogomphy, very often with the pit, but in some Pycnomerus that we classify now, they don't have that inter-urogomphal pit at all. The very interesting group that has been kicking around in different groups as well in Tenebrionis and in Colidids, because of the tarsal formula, is the Latomitini. That's the tribe that we have described from Australia and Chile. So there are two genera in Australia, and there is one genus and a single species so far known from Chile. Those are the kind of, again, Orthoceros, some or stenosis type looking creatures with some 5-5-4 and some four segmented tarsi. The prostellar process is expanded, but the cavities are very narrowly open. There is a cytospit over here. The all ventrites in abdomen are free and very freely articulated, and a very narrow intercostal process, and there is no groove on the last abdominal ventrite. So these are all the three genera. The Latometus, it used to be classified in Tenebrionis, has got 5-5-4 tarsi, and then the Orthocerodus, that used to be a Sarotrium or Colidid, and then unknown before genus from Chile, North Orthocerus. Those guys have four segmented tarsi, this has got 5-5-4. Very, very beautiful creatures. Unfortunately, we don't know anything about the larvae of those. Then we're going to the remaining of the ironclad. There's the Phelopsini, which is basically only the genus Phelopsis, and Ian Foley has just completed his beautiful master thesis, which is coming out as a publication any day. And this is basically in United States and the eastern part of whatever Asia is, including Japan. It's coming up to northern southern China as well. There are several species here, and there's so far, I think, two recognized species in North America. And it differs from the Trusophora. It's that the male has got the pit over here, has got actual open procoxal cavities, and also has got basically the intercoxal process fused. Very broad, and the preapical groove is divided. But I think there are some compelling arguments saying that this is a very distinctive from the Zopherids, and I think in all analysis it is coming up that way. So this is Phelopsis, and this is one of the colleagues from Russia, Laffer, who collected those guys on a bracket fungi. Warren has put some interesting biological observations together about Phelopsis on Pithoporus betulinus. They are all feeding on a fungus, but the larva is actually living under bark in a wood. It's probably not getting into the fungus. That's my understanding of it. The next interesting group is Monomatain, so to say, that used to be a completely separate family. Now it probably is a sister group of Philopsines. They all are kind of very well defined and characterized because of these enormous eyes, which are very narrowly separated here. In some Zopharynes, the eyes are coming close, but they are not never really that close. They're huge. Then about 99% of the Monomatains have the cavity on the hypomeran. It's been reduced in a couple of species of Hyporagus. They have kind of a lenticular type of a body, and you know, not very significant. Nothing really very significant. They're kind of a brownish. Sometimes they're black, but sometimes they've got stripes actually or something. And the larvae are very, very much Zopharid-like, but they've got several interesting because they are feeding on a different substance. They are in a yucca or something. They lost the hypopharyngeal sclerum, and the mandibular molar has been reduced to a large extent. And they always have this inter-urogonphal pit. So this was all kind of the other groups, but now we are coming into the groups that I have been working more in my life. These are the true colidids, and I will just give you the brief overview of the couple of tribes, the major tribes. This is the tribe Colidiini. That these are all genera that we know that belongs there. There's a Eulonium, which is basically the Holarctic genus, but it's extending very, very far to South America. Colidium only occurring in a Holarctic and then going to South America. Anarmostis is South American, and Pseudo-Eulonium only South American. That candidate is kind of a little bit wobbly there, so we don't know exactly if it belongs there or not because it's got some peculiar features. This is the type genus of the subfamily Colidiini. They are all living in probably in all what we know. The Eulonium and Colidium definitely living in the tunnels of the scolytids and platypodids, and they are not necessarily predaceous, because there are some observations that they actually are, but some of them are probably just living on a kind of a frass which is there. So the larvae are definitely not predaceous, at least of the European Colidium that we have reared. They've never been reared on any kind of a they've been just sitting in a tubes filled with frass from the corridors of some scolytids, and they were quite happily living there. So. The second tribe, which is very interesting, is the tribe Nematidiini, which is basically monogeneric. There is only genus Nematidium, which kind of reminds a little bit of the Colidiini, but has got two segmented clap, and also the bases of mandibles are exposed, which is pretty rare in this group. And it's got the massive, narrowly pointed mandibles. It's definitely predaceous, and it's also another group has been feeding in scolytid and platypodid galleries. And there are some records saying that it's been kind of an efficient predator of those guys. The procoxy are very firmly close behind, and the kind of laminate type of the prostanular process. And also the eyes are coming very, very narrowly there, and there is a groove that antenna is fitting in. That group is basically very diverse in the New World, and it's very hard to say how many species are there, very difficult to really recognize them. And there is only maybe a handful of species in the Old World, and it's coming up to Queensland. And there is undescribed species from Fiji and New Guinea and all those other regions. The interesting group is the genus Rhopalocereus, which is placed in his own tribe, Rhopalocereini. It's basically, there is one species in kind of a central Europe. There is several species in Africa and probably about four on Madagascar alone. And there is one species in kind of Indonesian islands, and there's probably another four or five in New Guinea, and extending up to the northern Queensland, they're all undescribed. And then there are a couple of small, very little things up to the Fiji as well. The This is the Australian undescribed species. The larva is the Rapallosaurus rondani, the European ones that I and my colleague Burakowski has done some work. This is very atypical because it doesn't have any urogonphy at all. It kind of look grape-like, and it doesn't have any stigmata, and it's just kind of boring through the decaying wood, and the larva is actually, you know, making kind of a disc from the excrement. Yeah. Gympilodines is another kind of a variation on the theme on the long colidids, again living in galleries of platypodids, and especially we know that from the Australian genus Sudendestis, that has been reared there. And but there is no again argument that they've been actually feeding on the eggs or the larvae, maybe a little bit, but not that much. This is widely spread tribe. There is a lot of genera in Africa. There is only one genus in New World, actually, and there is several genera in Indonesia. And it's coming up to Australia, to the northern Queensland. The really exciting group are the Acropinae. This is another group which is completely New World, and it's basically their species. This is another project that I and Mike were supposed to do, and Ian was supposed to finish, and hopefully this will happen at some point. They've got the enormous eyes, especially in the genus Acropis, but they are just of great to the kind of a small and a little bit less appealing creatures. The very limited in distribution tribe Orthocerini. These are another things which are kind of living on the surfaces of the ground under lichens. They've got this beautiful beautiful sculpture and this antennae which are just completely throwing up. The larva looks like a normal colidid. There is nothing really peculiar about it, and it's definitely feeding on the lichens. And the largest group, which is absolutely diverse and almost impossible to characterize. We lumped together several groups there, and we really don't know exactly what Syncytinae are. And usually when you pull out all those other tribes, what is left are Syncytinae. So this is the typical Syncyta. There's this, of course, Bitoma, and this is the Lascanotus. They are the most kind of easily recognized groups. And there are some good evidences that some of those, especially Lascanotus, including larvae and adults, are predaceous, living in ascolitis and ascolitid galleries. Those are fungivorous, and this is probably omnivorous, whatever it can get. There are such a diversity of those groups, and in some places like Australia or New Zealand, they just absolutely go berserk. There is such enormous speciation going on, that especially in New Zealand, that there is probably one of the most common groups that you collect when you sift litter, and the shapes of the body and they're all wingless. They get into a completely blind state as well. It's enormous, and it's really something which probably from New Zealand alone there is about 226 species described right now. So it's just enormous group there. But in all the Syncytinae, you can see there's the same trends in terms of the body shape. So it could be cylindrical because they are living in galleries. They could be flat and living under bark. They could live on the ground as well. So they have all this same permutation of characters that you see in other tribes. So that's why it's very difficult to characterize what the Syncytinae actually are. And this is just the last picture of a still undescribed genus species, which has got the cryptogams growing on top of it, and this is from Australia, but there is another several species from New Guinea, and it's definitely flying, but apparently when there is a growth of these cryptogams, they just glue the elytra together, so the beetle just cannot fly, and that was actually investigated by Gressett and Alsamuelson in Papua New Guinea. Thank you very much.
You're good. So we have time for about two questions.
A quick question on the news with the formula 554444 in Spain frogs. Does that bother you at all?
No. Well, this is just, you know, one of those characters that just seems to be coming and going all the time. And you can see that in many other groups as well. So there are some, what I've been like looking across all the Beatles, there are some groups that are incredibly conservative. So like Korolophi that I'm talking about. They are tiny little creatures, but there is no single Korolophi known that has different formula but 4-4-4. And you would expect with such a miniature body that you can get all out of suit, like in coccinellus. There's everything. You can have four segmented, three segmented, going, forward and back. And that's one of those. And well, we can have all these cuckoo joys that the males have got 5-5-4. They just have it, and that's it. I don't have any explanation, but it has to be a relatively simple mechanism, I think, in terms of a genetic, kind of a variation, because it's just all over the place.
Another question? Rob?
Eusagomorpha is known from like mid-Helvetian fungus associations. Mm-hmm. And yet, a couple years ago, I found Eusagomorpha montanus deep in a very low elevation cave. And that was an interesting find. Okay. I don't know what it's doing there.
That's very, very keen. Yeah.
I know lots of places.
No, well, the problem is that we know very little about the biology of those beetles, and even they are kind of easy, some of those are easy to collect, like, Bitoma or something. Nobody really has bothered much into, getting into biology, Burakovsky was the only person that has really put a lot of effort into rearing all these European colonies, and that's why we've got all this larvae and association, but it's very little known otherwise.